The man is fearless. He is this generation's greatest bullfighter from Cadiz. He completed 100 corridas last year and is on schedule to do the same this season. The man's a marvel.
100 fights in one season was a marker the pro matadors worked toward. It was an elusive goal, but those who made it were honored and guaranteed a full fight schedule the following season. A great matador could earn up to $25,000 for one fight, so 100 fights in a season added up nicely. The surrounding crowd enthusiastically waved white handkerchiefs and colorful scarves at the matador.
While I'm not willing to get out a flag in protest, I'm not sure I can cheer for blood sport.
It is not a sport, Anya. Bullfighting is an art, a spectacle. Just reserve judgment and take it in for now, okay?
Right now, it wasn't the matador who swung the cape before the hulking bull, but rather a banderillero dressed in a smart red costume detailed with jet beading. El Bravo stood off beside a portion of wood fence, a barrier the matadors could flee behind during a bull's attack. The matador was tall and slender. Regal in his suit of lights, he studied each move the bull made as his assistant goaded the animal with the magenta and yellow cape.
Why doesn't El Bravo test the bull himself?
That's his assistant's job. El Bravo needs distance to take it all in. Looking for which horn the bull favors, and whether or not the beast charges straight and with his head down or high. This one is calm, a good bull.
How would you know a bad bull?
Those cartoons that feature the snorting bull that paws the ground with a hoof, that is a bad bull. Too cocky and fearful, easily riled and nervous. The matador desires a calm, brave animal to put him to the ultimate test.
The bull being an herbivore, it's surprising they would charge a man at all.
Rhinoceroses are herbivores. I wouldn't want to stand alone before one of those tanks.
Touché.
Anya noted the matador's keen eye on the bull as the bull lowered his head to charge the cape.
Do they know what they're getting before the bull comes to the ring?
Not usually. The bulls are selected before the fight in the sorteo. The matador never does the selection. He sends his second-in-command, who pays close attention to horn size, sharpness, and shape. But it's difficult to determine the animal's mien in a small stockyard. I assume you're going to stick around and look into the murdered man's life?
I'm leaving that to the police. It's curious, if you ask me, that someone would leave behind such a piece as the bronze bull at the scene. Even if the murderer had no idea the value of the object, he...
Or she
should have been able to take one look at it, know that it's an artifact, and pocket it.
Well, I'm not much for theft myself. Yet when faced with a situation where I must take another's life to defend my own, I don't hesitate.
And does that somehow extend to your interest in watching another man murder an animal before a crowd?
Ah, but a bull is not a defenseless animal. Name one other situation where an animal raised for slaughter is given the opportunity to defend his life.
Anya wanted to reply, but Garin had a point, if a rather dubious one.
Besides, the man isn't safe from danger. The matador faces danger for us all. He offers us that risk we are unwilling to take for the thrill of near death.
This coming from a man who takes risks daily.
Well, I'm speaking about others.
The matador stepped out from behind the fenced barrier and swirled the magenta and yellow cape to attract the bull's attention.
Now look, left horn. El Bravo will present the cape to the left because that's the bull's dominant horn.
The bull passed close to the matador, one deadly ebony horn brushing his hip. The matador didn't step back, but instead leaned in toward the bull. The bravery required to take that stance and not step aside was incredible, at once brutal and graceful.
That is impressive.
As I've said, bullfighting is an art. The crowd doesn't attend to witness a grisly murder, but rather the art of man against beast, as each offers his very life in a competition that pits grace and style against ferocity and danger.
Except when the picador enters. Then the grace and style fades and the cheating begins.
Anya, I won't even try. I had expected you, of all people, to have an open mind about this event.
I do.
She understood that the initial cape work performed by the matador was designed to tire the bull, to seek out and exploit his weaknesses. It was a mind game between man and beast. The moment when the bull showed his mettle, be it gentle and awkward when approaching the cape, or determined and ferocious with each charge. But Anya's carefully restrained judgment nudged loose as the picador rode in on his horse, wielding the long spear he would use to poke the bull in the shoulder muscle to further weaken him. The picador's horse was shielded with a heavily padded fabric and provided the bull something to charge after so many failed charges against the matador, keeping him riled up. With his 8-foot lance, the picador stabbed the bull in the morillo. The huge neck muscle swelled, which weakened the animal. Anya turned her attention back to Garin.
So, what brings you to Cadiz? You mentioned you were already here. What, were you following me?
I had no idea you were in the city until Ruse called. Manuel is a good friend. He's invited me for the week. I'll introduce you after the match.
It would intrigue Anya to meet the man. The matador worked a crowd-pleasing performance and even piqued the bull himself. With a daring charge directly at the animal, he placed the blue and pink ribbon darts, which looked to Anya like giant cocktail sticks, in the hump of the bull's neck. Normally this act was performed by the banderilleros, but some matadors chose to do it themselves out of machismo and to further impress the crowd. El Bravo held the second set of darts high to acknowledge the cheers. Then he waved them before the bull, taunting him. With a nod and a curt bow of respect, the matador ran counterclockwise around the bull, highlighting the beast's sinuous ability to turn on a dime as the bull tracked his opponent. El Bravo stopped. As he backtracked, the bull lowered his head to charge, and then he struck, jumping high to bring down the darts and land them directly on the hump. Blood spilled down the bull's hide, and once again Anya decided to take in the crowd instead of the spectacle.
Is Diego's murderer watching this display of savagery? Where did Diego get the bronze bull?
Thinking about the few valuable items unearthed from the dig, Anya wouldn't consider any of them the correct size for the wood crate.
Was it the police who passed the booty along to buyers? It would make sense that a police officer, wishing to remain anonymous, would use a liaison to deliver the goods. And yet, would a public official wanting to keep his or her identity a secret involve a third party like Diego?
Anya needed to find someone who had known Diego.
Garin's right. I can't resist a good mystery when it involves an artifact.
Garin sat forward in his seat. In the ring, the matador stood before the bull, his posture defiant. The line of his body was erect and graceful, with his shoulders thrust back and his hips forward. The bull stood squarely, his head slightly down and his tongue lolling over his lower jaw, showing his exhaustion. They stood less than 8 feet from each other, staring each other down. The matador held a smaller red cape now, and he moved minutely to the left, the bull reacting by adjusting his front feet. The third part of the match was called the faena, the final act, in which El Bravo squared up his opponent for the kill. Anya watched as the matador led the bull in a series of close passes along his body, with elegant sweeps of the cape. When the bull stood, tongue lolling and weakened, the matador approached him, holding his stiff bolero jacket open in defiance of attack.
Center of the ring, a bold place to perform the kill.
The matador bowed grandly before the bull. Then he turned to the crowd, lifted his chin as if to ask permission, when in fact he was asking permission to make the kill from the presidente, who oversaw the fight. El Bravo turned back to the bull. Plunging, he vaulted into the air and brought down the estoque, a special sword with a curved tip designed for the kill, shoving the blade up to the hilt. The blade, delivered correctly, would sever the aorta and bring death quickly, but rarely instantly. In a renewed burst of energy, the beast charged. El Bravo slapped his palm to the bull's forehead, tracking him in a circle until the bull came to a thundering stop. The bull took 2 unsure steps and fell to his front knees. The matador again bowed before his opponent. El Bravo's second-in-command rushed in for the coup de grace, delivered with the puntilla, a stab never given by the matador. And it was over. As the audience swept the air in a storm of white handkerchiefs, the matador and his entourage made a victory lap around the ring and were granted the bull's ear by the presidente. El Bravo, their local hero, had once again mastered death. Garin led Anya out of the grandstand to a backstage area. The crowd thinned as they went where only invited guests were allowed. It had been an afternoon fight, so it was still early, around 6 in the evening. The sky was pink, shot through with gold clouds. Women in colorful ruffled skirts and elegant updos dotted with roses and peonies swarmed the vicinity where Anya suspected the matador stood. She was suddenly conscious of her sun-baked ponytail and casual attire. A glamour girl, Anya was not, but she did like to blend in. Garin, as usual, worked the crowd with the practiced ease of a celebrity. When offered sherry on a silver platter, Garin took two goblets and handed one to Anya.
The local sherry is sweet, but I think you'll like it. Let me introduce you to Manuel.
He looks to be busy signing autographs. I'd hate to intrude.
Anya, you need to exercise your social skills. Swordplay and dirt flinging do not an appealing woman make.
Oh, is that so? And yet on certain occasions, you seem to find some appeal in me?
I've seen many sides of you, and each one holds immense appeal. Perhaps you're right. Stick with the adventurous archaeologist look. Keeps the other men away. Manuel! I'd like you to meet a friend of mine. She's an archaeologist.
Can't be. She must be a model or celebrity.
Now Anya really felt like an unpolished pebble among a scatter of gemstones. El Bravo's eyes were as black as his slicked back hair, and his face was thin and chiseled to the bone. The hint of a 5 o'clock shadow gave him a brooding, dark look. If she hadn't seen him slaying a bull 30 minutes earlier, she'd never peg him as capable of such a brutal act. Then again, it was his profession. He'd trained years to master the elegant moves, the unflinching postures, the seemingly innate bravery. He was a master, and certainly he didn't look upon what he did as murder. And Anya was impressed.
Yours was the first bullfight I've attended.
And your opinion?
You are indeed the maestro.
Thank you. But had I known someone so beautiful was in the audience today, I would have dedicated the kill to you. Please accept my belated dedication to your beauty.
Maestro!
Manuel nodded to the man who addressed him and gestured him to follow.
I hope the two of you will do me the pleasure of coming to my villa later. We'll be celebrating tonight's success with a grand feast.
We wouldn't miss it.
Garin is staying with me at the villa. Miss Creed, do you have a place to stay tonight?
Thanks. I have a hotel room. But I would love to see your home and celebrate with you tonight.
With you in attendance, it will be far more interesting than I thought. The two of you will ride along with me in the van, right?
Of course.
Very good.
Manuel returned to the señorita's adoration.
He's quite the charmer.
And he succeeded in luring you in with only a few words. Have you eyes for a man you consider a murderer, Anya?
He's not.
Perhaps Garin had been right. There were many ways to look at the reasons behind a man's actions. Bullfighting, an art form? Two killers had entered her life today. Now to determine if they were standing on equal, albeit shaky, moral ground, or if one might be granted the excuse that art trumps blood. Anya and Garin exited the arena under glaring streetlights right where El Bravo's van was parked. The side of the van was painted to depict him posed before a bull, cape sweeping gloriously.
A rock star's tour bus.
Every culture had their idols. Spain happened to worship men who slaughtered animals raised for only one appearance in a ring, a fight that virtually always ended in the animal's death. Maybe that's why Anya found herself stepping a little closer to the line of protesters behind a safety blockade. Garin leaned close to say something to her when a bullet hit the van's back quarter, just above the decal of Manuel's eye. One of Manuel's assistants shoved his maestro into the van.
Was he hit?
Anya's heartbeat quickening. She reached for the sword hilt, but with so many around her, she stopped short of grasping it. Anya had caught a flash of something and turned to scan the row of brick buildings lining the opposite side of the street.
A sniper? Possible.
But a professional shooter wouldn't position himself too close to the stadium and risk being sighted. She glimpsed another flash from a rooftop a quarter of a mile down, possibly from sun reflecting off the shooter's sunglasses.
I'm going after him.
Right behind you!
Kind of detracts from their stance against cruelty. Did you see if he'd been hit?
The bullet was 4 feet off its mark. What did you see?
That building on the left side of the street. 3-story yellow brick with the curved windows along the top and Moorish tile work. I'm going around this side. You take the north wall.
Anya dodged down a narrow cobbled street where the streetlights didn't reach and saw that Garin had indeed forked off.
How shockingly compliant of him.
Someone was coming down the iron stairway hugging the building. Turning right, Anya spied a dark figure racing away from the scene toward the glow of colored lights. If that was the shooter, Anya had just gotten an important clue. Garin veered around the other side of the building, and Anya signaled with a slashing gesture the way the presumed shooter had run.
You get a look?
They converged in an alleyway and headed toward the street, where the live music was coming from. Arriving at the end of the street, Anya's heart sank as they paused in the passageway before entering the fray. The crowd was thick, dressed in bright skirts and colors. When the bullfights were in town, there was always a party.
The shooter was wearing a skirt.
What?
The shooter was female.
Are you sure? Maybe you saw a dancer from the crowd.
She had no rifle, but was running with real purpose. I think the skirt was red with polka dots, though in this light, that's only a guess.
Polka dots? Around here, it would be tough to single her out.
Anya and Garin walked into the center of the festival. The street was packed with tourists, children, and dancers whirling near the musicians.
Let's scout the area.
As they insinuated themselves into the crowd, loitering beneath colorful swags of bright paper flags and lamps, skirts of many colors swirled about them. Everywhere, flashes of red and white polka dots caught Anya's eye.
They all have polka dots.
Not all. What else did you see? Any particular facial attributes that stood out?
I didn't see her face. She had dark hair. Probably best to circle back and take a look up on the roof, see if a weapon was left behind.
That's best left to the authorities, Anya. You don't want to overstep the line here. I'm heading back to the stadium to check on Manuel. Come along, Anya.
Why would someone want to kill a matador?
I don't know, but that's two murders and one attempted murder for you in one day. I think that's a record, eh?
I attract adventure.
More like chaos.
They veered toward the stadium, but Anya paused and looked toward the celebration. Her instincts weren't ready to let this one go.
Can I meet you back at the stadium? Or better yet, at El Bravo's? I want to wander through the crowd a little longer.
Call me on my cell for directions.
As Garin stalked off, Anya swung around and eyed the alleyways and streets that turned off from the main road. The best place for a sniper to hide would be away from the crowd, unless she was dressed as a dancer. She passed a group of three dancers in polka dot skirts in varying shades of red. They were all gray-haired and too well-rounded to have given Anya such good chase. Coming upon a dancer in a red and white polka dot dress, Anya joined the crowd that stood around her. The dancer held a regal pose, arms arced above her head and chin thrust down defiantly as she worked some fancy footwork on the cobblestones to no more than the clatter of the crowd's claps. The rhythmic clapping, called palmas, punctuated the dancer's moves. The woman's hair was pulled back into a loose ponytail, not nearly as smoothly coiffed or styled as the other dancers around her. A sheen of perspiration beaded her neck and chest. Anya moved to the front of the crowd, clapping along and getting the hang of the palmas after a few tries. The dancer spun around, her ruffled skirts dusting the air and revealing her rapid footwork beneath. It was amazing the punishing motions she could perform so forcefully and yet gracefully. Must be hell on the Achilles tendons. Anya's sight fell on the black mark on the woman's wrist. Looked like a tattoo, but her rapid movement wouldn't let Anya make out the design. Clutching her skirts at her hips, the dancer brought her dance to an end with a triumphant thrust of her hand to the sky. The dancer's head tilted down, and her eyes angled to Anya. Her steady, dark gaze did not falter as she read Anya's daring look. A smirk curled the corner of the dancer's mouth. She stepped back and performed a twirl, fitting herself between two men in the crowd with a flirtatious ease, and then she dashed.
Who dances and dashes? Someone with good reason.
Anya chased after the dancer, knowing she had found the sniper. The dancing and festivities stretched ahead down the street, seemingly endlessly. Perhaps the hostel hadn't been so wild after all. The dancer dodged into the crowd, but Anya stayed close. Tourists jostled Anya off balance. Gripping a street lamp pole, Anya swung her body around. Using the momentum to lunge upward, Anya almost managed to grasp the dancer by the arm. The nails in the dancer's flamenco shoes weren't doing her any favors now. Sure, they created a loud, exacting beat when flamenco dancing, but they weren't so great for stealth.
And they have to give crummy traction.
The dancer turned right, and the alley was so narrow, Anya had to turn sideways. The dancer was 30 feet ahead of her and veered left down another alleyway, overturning a garbage can as she did. Noting the can, Anya sped up and jumped over it. She swung around the corner where the dancer stood, poised for Anya's approach. Anya charged the woman. The punch to her shoulder threw Anya off balance and against the brick wall. A heel kicked Anya in the hip, and she felt a nail head tear her skin.
You're loco.
Body poised in a half crouch for another punch, the dancer waited for Anya to shake off the blow. Then she followed with another swing. Anya dodged to the left. Anya kicked high, connecting with the dancer's ribs and knocking her against the brick wall.
You were on the rooftop. You shot at the matador.
I've been dancing for my supper all night.
I'm not with the police. I just want answers.
I saw you earlier. You work for the murderer.
What murderer?
El Bravo.
I don't work for him. I am curious, however, why you use a famous matador for target practice.
His fame is bought with blood.
Isn't that the point of bullfighting?
Still bent in the position to regain her breath, Anya called the sword to her grip. Anya charged the dancer, slamming her against the wall again with a fist to her shoulder and the blade up under her chin.
Oh yeah, you're mighty intent on protecting a murderer, eh, Americana?
Protesters usually carry signs and shout angry epithets. I can't believe you'd go so far as to shoot the guy.
You think I'm protesting the senseless killing of bulls? Oh, senorita, you have got it very wrong.
Overhead, Anya heard a couple of young boys who had stuck their heads out a second-story window to see what was going on. They held a huge paper airplane.
If I'm wrong, then correct me. Why did you take a shot at Manuel Bravo?
Because someone needed to.
Not good enough. Give me one good reason why I shouldn't make a citizen's arrest.
Something poked her above the ear. The dancer shoved Anya's shoulders and slipped out of her hold. The hard sole of the dancer's shoe connected with Anya's kidney. She stumbled, crushing the paper airplane underfoot. After an unsuccessful search for the dancer, Anya returned to the stadium where the crowd had thinned. The protesters still remained, their chanting as determined as ever. They'd taken to shoving flyers in the windows of passing cars. According to a passerby, Manuel's van had driven off 10 minutes ago. Garin must have been in the van. Half a dozen police marked out the area, and Anya sighted Cesar Soto's cowboy hat. Beneath the brim, he grimaced at the protesters. Anya could feel his frustration. She wasn't aware the Cadiz police had jurisdiction on the mainland, but Cadiz was a province, so perhaps they operated in all the surrounding towns. At sight of her approach, Soto grimly shook his head in disbelief.
Guess I shouldn't be surprised after your message earlier. You're quite the character, Miss Creed. You joining the protesters?
You've pegged me wrong, Officer Soto. I followed the shooter, but lost her.
You followed the... her?
Uh-huh.
Me and you? We need to talk.
I'll give you her description and answer any questions you have.
Yes, you will. And we've another dead body to discuss. Simon Klosky was brought into the morgue an hour ago.
Like I said, I'll tell you all I know.
Once again, Anya found herself seated on a metal folding chair in the interrogation room. She gave details of the shooter's face to Officer Soto, while an artist in the corner sketched quietly. Anya detailed how she had chased the woman after realizing she was more than a dancer, and that she had spoken briefly to her. She didn't mention Garin. It was always easier to keep that man's name out of things.
Are you often compelled to take the law into your own hands, Miss Creed?
There were no police present when the matador was shot at, so I followed her.
Twice in one day you've graced my humble office. That's a new one for me. You done, Sophia?
Yes.
The artist set the sketch on the formica table before Anya, and she leaned forward to study it. She had come pretty close, but...
May I?
Anya gestured to the artist's pencil. With reluctance and a nod from Soto, Sophia handed over her pencil. While she didn't fancy herself a portrait artist, Anya was used to sketching when she was out on a dig. She erased some of the lines and drew a narrower jaw, adding a long sweep of ponytail at the side of the head until she was satisfied. She placed the drawing on the table and turned it to Soto.
That's her. Dark hair and eyes, heart-shaped face.
That's half the female population of Cadiz. More than half.
Anya studied the portrait again, then held it back as if she were looking at the face of a woman standing in the festival crowd. It was a common face.
Well, that's her. She had a tattoo on her left wrist, but I wasn't able to get a good look at it.
That could help. You two fought?
She wasn't a street scrapper. Definitely trained. But then if she's a sniper, I assume she received training somewhere.
We try not to make assumptions here, Senorita Creed.
Of course not. When are you going to ask me about Simon Klosky?
The artist shifted uncomfortably on her chair. Soto drew out a new file from beneath the one he'd been making notes in.
Simon's death may be related to Diego Montero's murder, but I'll leave the police work to you.
How do you know Simon Klosky, Senorita Creed?
I told your officer this morning. I'd been working on a dig in Puerto Real alongside Professor Jonathan Crockett. Klosky was one of the many college students who spent a day or two on the dig to get hands-on experience. No one was scheduled for a particular shift. It was very laid back. I returned to the dig this morning to find Crockett in a state after he was robbed yesterday evening.
How come he didn't report it?
You'll have to ask him.
Soto sat up straight and gestured for the artist to leave the room. Then he clicked on the intercom attached to his lapel.
Please send me an officer to take some notes.
The same officer, Maria Alonso, who had questioned Anya earlier this morning, entered the interrogation room, took one look at Anya, and her eyebrows rose under her shock of dark bangs. The officer was about to say something when Soto gestured for her to sit and start taking notes.
Please go on.
I didn't know Simon well. I only worked alongside him about 6 hours.
And when was that?
2 days ago. I left the dig around 3 in the afternoon because I had an appointment at the museum with James Harlow, the head of the archaeology department. I've already explained that, too.
And how did you discover the death of Simon Kloski?
I almost stepped on his body. He'd been thrown into the dig pit and covered with dirt, but not well. His hands and feet were visible.
And you said Jonathan Crockett was still at the site today when you returned?
Yes.
He wasn't there when we retrieved the body of Kloski. Maria, send a car to the dig for Jonathan Crockett. Do you know if he's still there?
No idea. He said he had plans to pick up and leave.
Without notifying the authorities of the murder.
Anya simply shrugged. For the next 20 minutes, she relayed all the details. The directions she'd taken to get to the site. The condition of the place when she had arrived days earlier, as well as how it had appeared this morning. Crockett's demeanor, and any other details she could recall. She neglected to mention the struggle with Crockett and nearly cutting off his hand, or that Garin Braden had accompanied her. Surely they had found the AK-47, and if Crockett was smart, he wouldn't have handled it after Garin had wiped it clean of prints. Soto had almost rubbed his forehead raw by the time they finished. Incredible as it sounded, she knew he believed her, and was doing a thorough job of police work, which she appreciated.
Is there anything else you need from me, Officer Soto?
I don't believe so. We appreciate your efforts, Señorita Creed. Know that we will pursue this matter. Also know that you are not required to take chase should you witness yet another illegal occurrence during your stay in our city.
Excuse me.
Thank you for your cooperation, Miss Creed.
There is one other thing.
Which is?
I wanted to tell you directly because it may be sensitive information.
Are you making another assumption, Señorita?
I'm not sure. It's a detail Jonathan Crockett gave me. He said the gunmen who murdered Simon Kloski and looted the site were with the Cadiz police. I thought you should know.
I appreciate you giving me all the facts when I had asked for them.
That's it. That's all I know.
Did you have plans to leave Cadiz soon?
Probably tomorrow afternoon. I've a few details at the museum to settle tomorrow, and then I'm off on a flight back to New York City.
I know the museum staff works late hours. Take care of those details tonight. I've gone ahead and booked you a midnight flight.
Soto dug inside his coat pocket and handed her a plane ticket.
What?
He gestured for her to pick up her backpack from the floor near the door. She snatched the ticket and shoved it in the backpack.
I'll assign an officer to escort you to the museum, and then on to La Parra Airport in Jerez. Good evening, Señorita Creed. It's been a delight having you visit our city.
Really? Then why are you so eager to get rid of me?
Not at all. I merely thought it a courtesy to offer you the flight. Do you not appreciate that?
Yes, of course. Where am I headed?
London. You're on your own from there.
Will you contact me if you need someone to look over the bronze artifact connected to the Diego Montero case?
We work with experts at the university and the museum, Señorita Creed.
Of course.
So why did Anya sense those experts would never learn about the case? Could the police really be involved with the looting at Crockett's site? She hadn't given Soto James Harlow's name. She wasn't sure if that was a good thing or not. And with that thought, she was escorted from the station to a waiting patrol car. That did seem a bit much. Clearly, they wanted her out of town.
Something is rotten in the state of Cadiz.
But now wasn't the time to make a break. Anya slid into the back of the patrol car and closed her eyes while she was escorted to the museum. She made a big show of going inside, but couldn't find James Harlow. An assistant said he'd gone home an hour earlier. Well, Anya had photos of the entire collection on her laptop. All she needed now was to take a few notes on the coins, things the camera might not pick up, which would take longer than the half hour the officer had allowed her. Not a problem. She'd do it tomorrow.
They don't really think I'm getting on that midnight flight, do they?
Back in the patrol car, Anya was escorted to the airport in Jerez de la Frontera. After being dropped off outside, she waved to the officer behind the wheel, who nodded politely to her, and stayed put. Anya lingered inside the airport, certain she was being watched, and then decided to approach the counter and ask about exchanging her ticket for a flight departing a few days from now. By the time she turned back, The patrol car had left. Anya dashed outside to hail a taxi. Once back in Cabiz, Anya directed the cab driver to pull around to the back of the Hotel Blanco. She wasn't going to take the chance of being seen. She hadn't thought she'd been followed from the airport, but she had learned to always keep one eye over her shoulder. Tipping the cabbie, Anya entered through the hotel's kitchen door, which was propped open to cool the place down after an evening of hot ovens. She walked with purpose through the dark kitchen, lit by a single fluorescent strip over the grill that reeked of something burned. No workers in sight this late at night, but someone had to be around. Probably out on a cigarette break. She'd lucked out, and leaving the kitchen, she quickly found the hall to the guest rooms. After winding through the hotel kitchens, Anya navigated her way back to her room. The comfort of sleep called to her. She plopped down her backpack and collapsed into bed until sunlight burned across her eyelids. After a shower and breakfast, Anya sat on the bed and powered up her laptop. She logged on to archaeology.net to scan for anything similar to the bull statue. It would help to be able to match it to others of similar design, yet Anya already knew where it came from.
Well, no.
That wasn't true. She knew where it had been dug up, but not necessarily the country of origin. A museum was her best bet, so Anya did a search on robberies and entered the names of the museums in the Andalusian area. The statue wasn't the key to this mystery regarding the dead man carrying stolen artifacts, but it was a starting point. The real mystery was what had been in the crate, because that looked to be the motive for murder. Clicking through the photos section on the vast online forum, she did find a few pictures close to what she'd found at the dig site. Primarily a fertility god, when shown in human form, she was surprised to see Baal associated with the Illuminati. That was a new one on her, but then again, the Illuminists tended to lay claim to any number of symbols, including the Star of David. The statue Anya had unearthed bore a remarkable resemblance to an Iron Age bronze statue, but without the actual artifact in hand again, she couldn't date it. Then she found a hit. In 1920, a cache of artifacts had been stolen from the Cadiz Museum. It had been a brazen daytime heist involving two patrons who simply walked off with a bag stuffed with artifacts, including a silver platter believed to have been a gift to Isabella of Castile from the French king, Louis XI, and various gold pieces.
I wish Harlow had known about this.
But the new information didn't really advance her sleuthing. They'd already suspected the items stolen. That's what had landed the pieces in the ground in Puerto Real. But who had stolen them recently? Anya looked up Jonathan Crockett, but his credentials all checked out. She'd already vetted him last week, prior to working with him. Crockett hadn't officially headed any digs since the 1990s, but she'd guessed that about him after an afternoon of chatter at the dig site. This was now a hobby for him, and his undertakings were mostly small projects that others couldn't be bothered to get funding for. Anya couldn't find any criminal files attached to his name, but a man who avoids the police usually has good reason to. Checking her watch, Anya saw that it was still only 7 a.m., too early to venture out to shop for a change of clothing. She wanted to wait until the streets were filled with tourists. Cesar Soto made her itchy for reasons she couldn't pinpoint. That familiar itchy feeling never boded well. Attempting a specificity that would narrow her Google search, Anya typed in Diego Montera, guitarist, and Cadiz. Even so, her search yielded 8 results. The first 2 entries were for men far older than the man she had seen lying face down on the hotel bed. Mid-20s had been her guess. The 3rd entry, the homepage of the Gato Negro Club in the oldest part of town. The link opened onto a photo of the nightclub, which featured a black door nestled unassumingly in a brick wall. No neon, no fancy signs. Looked as if you had to know the secret password to enter. Anya clicked on the performers page. Pictures of 6 guitarists were listed with short bios beside each. Diego's picture was last, and since the names were not alphabetical, she guessed talent or tenure ranked them. Bright blue eyes beamed at her from the laptop, and his curly dark hair was tugged loosely behind his head. He looked strikingly handsome and totally unguarded. His bio read, "Diego Montera, 24, is a guitar prodigy who has been playing since he could hold the instrument. He hails from a line of toreros, the famous Granada Monteras."
Yeesh, way too young to die. And his family is into bullfighting?
She wondered why Diego had studied music instead.
Couldn't have been easy.
Anya was thinking how the family traditions in this neck of the woods ran deep through their culture like a vein of marble. A guitar player in a city filled with guitarists likely didn't command a high income. And if he had no help from family, he could have been lured to criminal activity. The thieving operation could hire out young and naive liaisons to transport stolen goods to buyers, use the liaison a few times, pay him in cash, then ditch him before the guy gets too smart and nosy or attracts police attention.
And if the police are involved?
Even more reason to use average Joes who need to pick up a few extra bucks and who can be controlled by threat.
But what was in that wooden crate?
The Cadiz police were probably working the same angle, checking the guitarist's background and following his leads. Bookmarking that page, she then clicked through to read about the Gato Negro's flamenco dancers. Anya found three listed. There was a picture of the first, Margarita Esperanza. She was probably in her 40s, and the photographer had captured her in a spin, her elegant red dress splayed about her ankles in blurred motion. Two additional dancers, Anastasia del Castillo and Eva Vital, were also listed. An ornamental capital A served in lieu of a photo for Anastasia. And next to Eva Vital's name was a curious symbol. Anya enlarged it, though its low resolution yielded a rather pixelated result. A wing curved to a decorative ball on the longest feathered tip. Anya had seen it last night on the dancer cum sniper's wrist. She was sure of it.
Really?
Anya sat up, staring at the symbol and cautioning herself not to draw conclusions. Eva Vital had a tie to Diego Montera. She danced at the same club where he played.
That doesn't mean anything. They could have just been co-workers, or they could have been friends. Perhaps he played while she danced? An intimacy born of artistic partnership? Would the man's murder have been enough for her to go vigilante and attempt to shoot another man? Or maybe they were lovers and one of them cheated? No, that only makes sense if Eva had had an affair with Manuel. No, it doesn't feel right. And Eva said she was going after a murderer. No, the two working in the same place has to be a coincidence. Could Diego Montera have been connected to Manuel Bravo? Montera's family are toreros, but Spain's filled with bullfighters. Doesn't mean they all know one another.
Though they would know the more popular names, and all matadors traveled, so those from Granada would know others from all over the country. Anya looked at the symbol on the screen, wishing there had been a picture of Eva to verify her guess.
Are you who I think you are? I need to talk to you.
Typing in Manuel Bravo and Diego Montera brought up no links. She searched Montera and found the names of his brothers. None appeared to have risen in the torero ranks to fame, and she could connect none to Bravo's name.
Yes?
Where did you disappear to last night?
After returning to the stadium, I found I was invited to another date at the police station. Seems they can't resist my company.
You're a regular social butterfly, Anya.
I managed to track down the sniper and thought it would be helpful if I gave the authorities her description.
You tracked her down and then let her go?
Not on purpose.
Ah, so she got the better of you, Anya.
She got lucky. Anyway, while I was being interrogated, I helped the sketch artist to complete a perfect rendition of the mysterious sniper, who may also be a flamenco dancer.
I suppose you mentioned the body at the dig?
I had an ethical obligation to do so.
I bet the Cadiz police have a file an inch thick on you by now, Anya.
Pretty close. They sure don't like me. I was given a police escort to the airport. Do not pass go, do not collect $200. The police want me out of town.
Come now, Anya. You've been escorted from various places on numerous occasions. Hell happens to me all the time. But I notice that you take the hint to leave about as gracefully as I tend to.
Yeah, but why don't they want me here? I didn't give any indication I had a desire to meddle in the case.
And yet you did, and will continue to do so.
I also provided a good likeness of the suspect.
Maybe someone recognized her?
I did mention Crockett's suggestion that the police had murdered Simon.
You didn't. And?
No comment from the officer. He pretty much shoved me out of the station after that.
You think the police are covering something up?
Maybe. I don't know. I'm not investigating a murder. I'm trying to track stolen antiquities to a dealer. I don't really think the sniper is connected, but it's too interesting to set aside. I still can't place how she would be connected to the bullfighter. She said something about going after a murderer. That can only be Bravo. But don't you think that's pushing the whole protest thing a bit far?
why don't you let me swing by and pick you up for a leisurely day at Manuel's villa? He expressed concern over your absence last night.
Leisurely does sound tempting, but I've got to head over to the museum this morning to complete my work with the medieval coins. Despite the distractions, I do take my work seriously. Give me the directions to Manuel's home and I'll get over there this afternoon. I wouldn't miss an opportunity to learn more about him.
That sounds strangely investigative. He's a good friend, Anya. I'll warn you to be respectful.
I gotcha.
Garin gave her directions, and Anya headed off to the museum. After a few hours of taking notes on the coins, Anya thanked James Harlow as they walked together to the shady Plaza de Mina at the front of the museum.
No luck on the investigation.
A sniper has been added to the mix.
Really? How does that tie in with stolen artifacts?
I'm not sure it does. It's an interesting added sideshow. And yet, I tracked the stolen bull back to this museum.
How? When was it stolen?
In the 1920s. I found a brief article online. Two ostensible patrons apparently just walked out with a shopping list of items. Obviously, they didn't get very far with the artifacts if we found one of them in Puerto Real. But there were no linked articles reporting of the thief's capture.
I'll have to look that up. That's an excellent reason to get the bull returned to the museum instead of routing it to the university.
I'm glad you can use the information to lay claim to the stolen statue. I found a close match from the Iron Age. I'm sure it represents Baal.
Iron Age? Do you think it's that old?
No, but again, I didn't handle it for long. I'd love to get my hands on the thing again. If you look it up, I'm sure the museum has records of acquisition.
Good call. I'll head right back to do that.
Does the museum generally seek out provenance on undocumented articles?
Of course, but there is only myself and a rotation of assistants, and as you've seen, we are kept quite busy just with daily operations. While we are very discerning about the items we acquire, it's difficult to refuse donations, you understand?
Sure. And if one museum won't accept the donation, then the wealthy benefactor will simply turn elsewhere and mark your museum off their list for future donations.
Exactly. It's a tricky balancing act.
Made even trickier when murder is involved.
We did not receive any of the artifacts associated with that murder, Anya.
Sorry, I didn't mean it that way. But can you be sure you haven't received items previously from the same seller?
Harlow winced and stopped about 10 yards into the Plaza de Mina, in the shadows from the tree canopy, to rub his thigh.
The injury bothers you today?
Yes, it's my hip, but it manifests as pain in my thigh. It's been trouble for days now. Ever since you arrived, actually. An odd coincidence, no?
I've heard skullcap is an excellent herbal remedy for muscle aches. It may be something to look into.
Thanks. So you're leaving Cadiz, then?
Not today. Heading out to Albravo's villa, actually. He and I have a mutual friend.
A marvelous hero for the city. You got to watch him fight?
Yes. He truly does deserve the moniker El Bravo. Thanks for the invitation to view the collection. I'll keep you posted if I get any closer to the looters.
I'd be disappointed if you didn't. Good afternoon, Anya.
Harlow waited for Anya to enter the crowd milling in the Plaza de Mina. And then he rang someone on speed dial.
Things go well?
I got the item. It's been processed. You should have it in your hands. What's the problem?
The problem is it got filtered through the wrong hands. Why weren't you more careful?
I always use the guy on the docks, you know that.
Yes, and I was taking a chance on you that apparently failed.
Hell, where is it now?
I believe you'll find the object much closer than you expect.
What is that supposed to mean?
Don't take that tone with me. You promised to keep this quiet, and it's become anything but.
Well, if you'd stop being so cryptic, maybe I could figure out what the hell you're talking about.
The piece was found at the scene of a murder.
The one in the hotel yesterday morning? Don't blame me for that.
I'm not. And yet, there was another murder I know I can blame on you.
James, just spit it out. Where is the piece?
It's been taken into police evidence. I want that statue. And I won't tolerate another mistake.
She was an amazing lover and an expert marksman, and he'd thought she had the operation under control, but this slip-up made him nervous. And with Anya Creed nosing about, Harlow wanted to quickly sweep this all under a nice, dusty carpet deep in the bowels of the museum. While strolling through the old marketplace and admiring the stalls of colorful fruits and vegetables and various handmade wares, Anya decided something a bit dressier than her cargo pants and t-shirt would be appropriate for her visit to Bravo's villa. In a tourist shop hugging a stucco building that also boasted a pottery shop, Anya purchased a long, colorful skirt that wasn't too frilly, along with a red blouse with cap sleeves. Changing in the back room behind a blanket hung up for privacy, she twisted her hair back into a chignon and stuck a decorative jet stick in to secure it. Not too costumey, and pretty. It would do. Anya hailed a cab and took it out to El Bravo's villa, which was situated on the western shore of Cavite. The matador's home was an unassuming whitewashed adobe villa. Magenta begonias lined the drive and the house, softening the bleak white structure. Seagulls circled in lazy turns out across the water and back toward land. A thin man with a thick nose and equally thick dark mustache, who introduced himself as Manuel's butler, greeted her at the door.
Senorita, Maestro Manuel is out back keeping the calves.
Thank you.
That sounded intriguing. Anya followed his direction back through the house. As she walked through the home, taking in the interior adobe style and clean, spare furnishings, her eyes fell on many Spanish artifacts from all time periods. The majority depicted bulls. A small ivory carving of a leaping bull looked Scythian in origin, but then she corrected herself. It was probably an ox. A bull-headed lyre with ivory horns sat in a recessed wall pocket under halogen lights. A teak statue of a matador posed before a bull had to be a recent creation, but the curvaceous form of it appealed to her. Anya paused to read the engraving on a modest plaque hanging at eye level, from the local St. Mary's Orphanage, thanking Manuel Bravo for his charity. It was known that after many of his fights, he bought the bull he'd slain, had it butchered, and gave the meat to a homeless shelter. It was one of the many reasons the locals adored their hero of the corrida. The real spectacle was the patio behind the house, decorated with white and black paper lamps strung from the palm trees that curved away from the sea. Add to that an unspoiled white sand beach, and it presented the perfect atmosphere for an afternoon siesta. She spied a fenced barn west of the property. At the butler's direction, Anya wandered across the sand that segued into dirt. Bravo's property was an official ranch, though small, complete with gauchos in blue jeans and cowboy hats. As she neared the fence, one of the men nodded to her.
Hey, Manuel, you have company.
The master of the homestead patted the rump of a white calf and sent it scrambling toward the open barn gates where another gaucho waited with a bucket of feed.
Anya!
Manuel Bravo gestured for her to join him in the fenced pasture. Anya didn't see a gate, so she hitched herself up on the fence beside a smirking gaucho and, clutching the skirt discreetly to her thigh, swung a leg over. She jumped down. Dusty red dirt, similar to the topsoil on the dig, spumed up around her shoes. She hadn't anticipated tromping next to bulls in a skirt. The matador's somber smile and long frame stilled her. He'd taken out the ponytail that he wore in the ring, and his thick, curly black hair was slicked along the sides of his head, yet the natural curl in it wanted to coil out above his ears. A dark shadow of stubble coated his jaw and halfway up his cheeks. He wore sleek gray trousers and a loose white shirt. It was no doubt a welcome respite from the form-fitting suit he wore in the ring.
Señorita Creed, you are stunning in red.
Thank you. You've got a beautiful home. I noticed you have many artifacts depicting bulls. Are you a collector?
Yes, by default, you might say. Every statue or bull object I own has been given to me by friends. Of course, Garin told me you are an archaeologist. I cannot tell you what the objects are worth or where they originated. I just know I like them. Perhaps later you can tell me a little of their history.
I can try. How are you, Maestro Bravo? I haven't had the opportunity to speak to you since the incident last evening. I was told the bullet didn't strike anywhere near you.
I felt it pass by my head, but no, it didn't touch me. I am invincible, be it horn nor bullet. El Bravo defies them both.
I suppose the local news reported on it?
Aha, national news. And you ran off in pursuit of the shooter. Remarkable. So brave a female I have not before known. Señor Braden tells me you lost track of the shooter, though.
Yes, I'm sorry. I tried, though I did get a good look at her and gave that description to the police. I'm sure they've shown you the picture. Do you have any idea who she could be?
Me? Why should I? Aficionados far and wide love me. I'm as startled by the event as everyone else.
No enemies? Jilted lovers?
Aha. I do tend to leave a trail of tearful lovers in my wake, but not so angry as to come after me with a pistol, I assure you.
It was a sniper rifle, high caliber. And the shooter, well, the shooter was positioned far enough away that she had to be an expert marksman. I imagine there are people who are not always so pleased with your performance in the ring?
Do you suggest that a lackluster bullfight should prompt someone to want to end my life?
I suppose that would be an awful excuse for murder.
I have nothing further to tell you, Señorita. I am sorry. Is that what you've come here for? To question me as the police did?
No, I'm sorry. I was just curious. I'm sure the police have already gone over the details of the incident with you.
So, an archaeologist. Sounds adventurous, yet boring. If you'll forgive me, you like to dig about in the dirt for treasures.
Oh, it isn't at all boring to me. But I can certainly understand how a man whose job is to face death would view it that way. It's not all sitting about and brushing away fine particles of dirt. I've been on dives in the Adriatic, climbed the Himalayas, and have even eluded pirates in the open seas.
You are a woman of many talents, Anya Creed, not the least of which is your charm. I have never seen a woman in a skirt leap a fence so gracefully. You want to learn to cape the bull?
That depends on whether the bull is as big as the one you fought yesterday afternoon in the ring, or the size of that little one you just sent back inside.
A little larger than the white calf, who is only 6 months on his legs. A yearling is best for practicing cape work. Let me show you a few Veronicas, and then we'll bring out Brutus to test your skill, eh?
Brutus, huh? All right, I'm game.
Cristo!
Manuel held out his hand. The ranch hand, sitting on the fence like a sun-baked vulture, tossed Manuel a small red cape, then leaned back against the barn wall and tugged down his hat brim to resume his snooze.
Cristo is my sword-bearer.
He carries all your swords to the fights.
That, and he tends to all my travel arrangements, cleans and folds the capes, and helps me dress before a fight. A personal assistant, if you will.
I could use one of those.
I was hoping you'd arrive before Senor Braden's return. I always enjoy time alone with a beautiful woman.
Thank you. You don't think the skirt will hamper the lesson?
It will handicap you, but I've seen women perform cape work while wearing much the same. Just don't allow a horn to hook the fabric.
As the torero moved the cape back and forth in graceful sweeps, getting the feel for the fabric, Anya cast a glance over the estate.
So all this land is yours, to the sea.
It's been my family's land for centuries. My father was a torero, and his father before that. And before that, the Bravo family raised fighting bulls on land off the Bay of Cadiz. They weren't prime bull for fighting. Bad maternal blood gave them a skittish and cowardly nature, which is why the family switched to pursuing the cape instead of the bull.
Garn explained that you select the bulls you fight beforehand. How do you recognize a cowardly bull from a brave one before it enters the ring?
That's not so easy. It is only after the animal is presented with the challenge of the moving cape that it decides to either stand and charge or stir the dirt with a hoof and snort and put on a cowardly display. I do not like a gutless bull.
I suppose that would make it difficult to show the audience your skill.
Oh, yes.
Manuel held the cape regally, arm out squarely and jaw lifted.
I enter the ring to show the crowd how brave the bull is. Everything I do is designed to display its bravery and give the animal the opportunity to defend its life.
I saw that yesterday, and yet...
You have questions about the art of the bullfight, Anya. Just ask. There is nothing I haven't heard.
You know the bull is going to die when it enters the ring.
Not so. Man and beast enter the ring with an equal chance to live or die.
Okay, but how can the bull die a noble death when you and your assistants keep wounding him, wearing him down to exhaustion? That's not very sporting.
Am I not wearied as well? Accompanying the physical strain, the mental toll is immense when a man must stand before his death daily. Yet if all goes as desired, both competitors give their all to the fight.
But you've got to reserve your strength for the next fight and the next. How many bulls have you killed during one corrida?
Six. They allowed me all six kills last year in Jerez de la Frontera during a celebration of my 100th corrida of the season.
Congratulations.
I never tire of appreciation from a beautiful woman. Now to the lesson. Yes?
Manuel held out the red cape.
This is a smaller practice cape. Take it in your left hand and hold it like this.
He stepped beside Anya to show her how to grip it, and then moved her hand left to right until she caught on to the sweeping motion.
It's not the color that attracts the bull.
No, it's emotion. They don't process color as we do, although bright colors do attract them. Until it is released into the ring, the bull has never seen a man on foot. Often, great bulls are sacrificed before even getting to the ring because some stupid kids have snuck into the field to tease them.
Aren't the bulls a good few years old when they reach the ring?
4 or 5 years, yes. They're kept on secluded ranches and guarded well. See, here, if I work my cape successfully, the bull will not be aware of me until the moment I wish to be revealed. I sweep it this way and that, back and forth, making many veronicas, passes. Then I allow the bull to see my feet.
He swept the cape slowly before him in demonstration.
Then my knees, and up to my hips. Then finally, when I wish it, I reveal myself to my opponent. And for the first time, the bull marks me, a man, standing before him, a target. That is why the torero must stand relatively still when closest to the bull.
I was fascinated at how you seemed to embrace the animal as it swept past you, turning its body to curve before you, and your arm slid over its back, almost hugging it.
Keeping my balance, and also, yes, there is a fine moment when man and bull can be so close as to be one. The crowd cheers, but I no longer hear them. My heart pounds. I cannot hear anything but my life racing through my veins.
I bet.
It is a sacred moment all toreros seek. There is no other feeling like it on this earth. It is in that moment our love for death is fulfilled.
I've heard matadors love death.
Just a little bit.
Anya swept the cape before her, impressed with the swish she'd given it.
Like this?
Yes, and then a sweep to the side as you step to the right. Feet together and legs straight. Keep a good, strong line with your body. Hips and torso long and shoulders proud. That's very good, Anya.
Manuel's hand moved along her back as if to correct her posture, and she straightened. But she realized the touch was more personal when his hand stopped at her shoulder, and he leaned in to smile at her.
Don't let the bull smell your fear.
Isn't it impossible not to be afraid?
Yes, it is. A torero who's unafraid has lost his bravery. That's why we say our prayers before each fight and take the meada de miedo right before going into the ring.
The big piss of fear?
Exactly as it sounds. The big piss of fear that relieves us before walking out into the ring. Otherwise, we'd surely wet our pants when the bull charges. It all shows in those tight tres cortes we wear.
That's for sure.
The women always linger on the pants. You are all much alike in your hearts. But I love women. I just wish it was easier to have a relationship during the season.
I imagine you're a bit of a rock star on the corrido circuit.
I fight at least every other night during the season. No time for more than a one-night stand. Not that I have a problem with that.
Cristo snapped awake, jumped over the fence, and disappeared inside the barn.
Let's see what you've got. You ready for the bull?
No. This bull doesn't have horns, does it?
Yes, but they're small and blunt. We keep them that way for the boys who come to practice on the weekends.
Anya gripped the cape and eyed the barn door when she saw the head of a dark-faced calf scamper along behind the fence. Scampering was good, yet it was much taller than the calf that had just been in the ring. Anya took a step toward Manuel and wasn't afraid to silently admit relief when he remained close beside her.
I admire a woman who's not afraid of new challenges.
The calf burst into the ring, trotting toward the opposite side of the fence. Its black shoulders were broader than most cows she'd seen.
That's not a yearling.
Brutus may be closer to 2 years. No worries, Anya. I'm right here. Perform the Veronica I showed you. Use graceful, long movements, and keep the cape to the side of you in case the calf should charge aggressively.
Manuel's whistle brought up the bull's head. The beast trotted toward them, playful in its steps. But as soon as Anya flicked the cape, it dodged toward the fluttering fabric,
Its short horn skimmed the cape, and he made a whole pass on her right.
I did it!
Anya quickly turned to attract the bull to the other side. Again it charged, and again she easily steered it around her.
Olay!
Now try it without moving your feet so much, Anya. Hold your body straight and glide along the bull's back.
The calf's head was as high as her shoulder, and this time she stood, legs together, and her side facing the charging beast. Waiting until the last moment, she flicked the cape to the right. Except the calf didn't veer right. Seeing the calf come right toward her, Anya stepped wrong on her foot. A strong arm clasped Anya around her ribs, swinging her around and away from the bull's charge.
I have you.